Hello and welcome. It's the I Can podcast. I'm your host. It's Richard McKernan. However you find yourself here, I'm so grateful that you made it, and hopefully you'll be grateful you did by the time we get to the end. What is this? This is the very first, some might call it, I know that I did, a pilot, first of many podcasts. It's a collection of ideas, insights, inspiration, interviews, and any other word I can think of, beginning with the letter I. But before we get on with the show, let's indulge ourselves just for a few seconds, a few more seconds on this wonderful theme, which may change as this series unfolds. So, this is it, the very first podcast. Actually, can I just make a confession? It's not the first podcast that I've ever done. I had this app on my iPhone. I've just checked this evening. Back in 2009, there was an app called Audio Boom, and it was a platform. And I used to post small 2-3-4 minute audio recordings on there. So that was my first attempt at doing podcasts. And I looked at one of them, one had over 500 views. I was thrilled to see that. And actually, do you know what I might do? I might incorporate some of those insights into some of the podcasts of the future, but not today. But I did enjoy listening to some of them. One of them was hugely inspirational, but more about that later. So it's called I Can, and that's for a reason. When I do my motivational talks, they are called I Can. My name is Richard McCann. My business is the I Can Academy. Can you see a theme there? And by the way, I wasn't born McCann. I changed my name so that I could use the I Can. No, I didn't change my name. I was born Richard McCann, son of Wilma McCann and Mr. Gerald Christopher McCann. So that's my parents. A little bit more about them in a moment. But going forward to share with you, you know, just my reflections, things that have gone on, things to celebrate, things that you might find interesting, in the hope that I can give some value to you. So let's get on with the show. So first of all, I can't assume that you do know anything about me. You might know something about me, but I have to say that 44 years ago, and we're coming up to the anniversary actually, but 44 years ago, the thing that one of the things that I'm most known for is the fact that my mum, Wilma McCann, was the first victim of the serial killer, Peter Sutcliffe. I will never forget that morning. I will never forget being woken up by my sister Sonia to be told that mum hadn't come home and we were going to go look for her, wandering the streets, looking for mum, sitting at the bus stop, age 5 and 7. You know, even though that was me we're talking about, I still find that scene incredible. Little did we know, we were never going to see mum again, and little did we also know that we'd walked yards from where her body lay at the back of the house on the field where she'd been killed by Peter Sutcliffe. Of course, we didn't know it was Peter Sutcliffe back then, and we had nobody had any idea what that, I guess, was the start of just over 5 years where he would go and murder at least 13 women and attack a further 7 who would survive. A horrible, horrible time in the north of England, particularly in Leeds and Bradford. And thankfully it did end, but it ended, well, it should never have started, but it took far, far too long for him to be brought to book, to be arrested, and for those killings to stop. So I think it's why it's important that I share that, because some of the things that I'm going to share in my podcast going forward, and possibly later on, now, or in this podcast, it won't mean anything to you if you didn't know that about me. So I just want to kind of get that out there. And, you know, it'd be fair to say, of course, not of course, but it's of course to me, but it'd be fair to say that I've not always been able to speak openly about mum's death. In fact, as a young person and a young adult, I used to lie about who I was. I was too ashamed of what I was associated with and embarrassed about how I felt and thought, and suicidal thoughts and such like. It was a really difficult, well, the first half of my life was particularly difficult, and I had no idea that there was going to be a way back from that. And that's what I want to share. The reason I want to share that there is a way back, because of course we all go through challenges, and I know that. I know that because of the work that I do in my resilience workshops, where I get each delegate to track their life, draw what I call the bounce back graph, the ups and downs of life. And every single person has a fluctuation throughout the life, the ups and the downs. Of course, some people are unlucky. I have had many, many, many setbacks and adverse situations in my life. But we all have them. We all have them. And the important thing to understand is there is a way back. Not everybody finds a way back. And I'm sure I'm not the only person that knows people who've, well, let's be open and frank about this, has ended their life because they couldn't see a way back from wherever they were. And another important thing to mention at this point is, I'm not going to tell you my whole story now, but another period in my life where I absolutely never saw a way back from was when I was released from prison 22 years ago. I was released from prison, I had bought a house, I was getting the house repossessed, and was given 6 weeks to get a job, and nobody would give me a job. I'm not saying, and I'm no doctor here, I'm no clinician, but I'm not saying that I was depressed. I just could not see, a positive future in any shape for me. I was losing my house, I had a criminal record, couldn't get a job, my girlfriend's dumped me, ended the relationship. I couldn't see any reason to live. Thankfully, I didn't end my life. I did find a way back. In fact, I know some of you know the detail here, but it was because I formed a suicide pact with my sister. And the very day we decided to do that, and before we acted on it, Sonia, my sister, did act, and she took some tablets and asked me to join her in a suicide attempt, and I got her into hospital. That was a pivotal moment in my life, and that was when I decided, first of all, to get her into hospital, but secondly, to finally try and rebuild my life. And it took a good few years to get myself a job, and, well, I got a job soon after that, but it took me a few years to pay off my arrears and, I guess rebuild my life. And I think why I share that is because, I mean, listen, we all know how much mental health is a big issue at the moment. Well, it's not a big issue at the moment. It's always been a big issue. It's always been a big issue for me. What I mean is it's an issue that is not frowned upon in a lot of places. It's something that is acceptable to talk about, stuff, challenges, things that are on our mind. I did a bit of research. I did do a little bit of research before I made this, or sat down to do this. I was staggered to discover that in 2017, this is the most up-to-date figures I can call, but in 2017, 6,213 suicides in the UK and the Republic of Ireland. Over 6,000 people are ending their lives, so it's to be encouraged, isn't it, for people to talk. Men, incidentally, are three times more likely to end their lives than women, And the age range for men, where they're most at risk, is between 45 and 49. I'm actually 49 now, so I suppose it's because at that age, maybe for a lot of men, there's a lot of responsibility. I don't know, midlife crisis. I'm not sure, but what I guess the point I'm trying to make is, it's great to hear and to see people talking about mental health. So that's to be, I guess that, I'm jumping ahead of the gun here, but that's to be celebrated. So in my resilience workshops, incidentally, one of the things that I talk about is people are encouraging people to share what they're going through, either ringing Samaritans, as I did many, many years ago. I actually became a Samaritan volunteer myself. But the simple act of sharing something can help with what you're going through. You know, what do they say? A problem halved, or a problem shared, is a problem halved. I think there's truth in that. One of the bits of research that I quote in my resilience workshop is by James Pennybaker, PhD. He did a PhD on the science of resilience, and in particular, how to thrive in life, 2015 incident. If you want to Google the research, but he did a study the students in America, and he got them to write down, we're talking about sharing things in, and this is the segment, it's called I Can Share. He got a group of students to write down the most challenging thing, most traumatic thing that they'd experienced in their life every day for a number of weeks, and he got a control group to write down something trivial, you know, the furniture in their room, etc. And what they found was those that wrote down, that their traumatic thing, were more optimistic, higher functioning immune system, and less visits to the student health centre. So it's good to not keep things bottled up, but to get it out there. even if you're not sharing it with somebody else, just writing it down, the very act of writing something down helps. So it's good to share. It's good to share, even to yourself. I can celebrate. I can. And I think we should all celebrate. And the reason I wanted to include I can celebrate is because, I mean, I'm a member now. In fact, I'm a fellow of the Professional Speaking Association. I don't know if you're aware that I am a motivational speaker. And at the PSA, as we call it, they in the Yorkshire region, where I used to be president, in fact, we have a thing called the Celebration Zone, where members can share their achievements since the last meeting. And it's great. And why it's great is, one, you should celebrate your successes, but I think it's also helpful for the newer members to hear what some of the members have achieved, and you know, often they might want to achieve that same thing themselves, so they can have discussions over break about, oh, how did you do that? So I guess that, and I've seen that work really well, the celebration zone, we call it. So I thought I would have a celebration zone within this podcast, and I'd encourage you to shout about your celebrations as well. What I'd like to celebrate today is the fact that I'm doing a podcast. I've toyed with the idea of doing a proper podcast. You know, over the last few years, I've been invited to speak on various podcasts around the globe, in fact. And I thought, oh, well, maybe I should be doing that. And I've not done it. But, you know, the reason that I'm doing it now is because my daughter, Sky, got one of those devices where you can talk to it and it plays music, but she needed to download Spotify. And I've been a tight Yorkshireman for a few years, and I've not signed up to Spotify because you've got to pay for it. But I finally decided to buy Spotify for the family, and I love it. I absolutely love it. Going back to the 80s and all those electro tunes, honestly, it's been a breath of fresh air. But I've come across other people doing inspirational podcasts and some funny ones as well. And that's the reason that I finally decided to bite the bullet and create my own. Now, I have no idea how successful or whether or not it'll be successful at all. But the very fact that I've decided to do it and sit down and I'm doing it right now, I'm celebrating that. And I want to encourage you to not to have those ideas in your mind, but to put them, well, not just on paper, but get them out there, get them out of your mind and into reality, and then let's, you know, celebrate that. And one final celebration, and honestly, it's taken me a few years to get here. You know, I'm going to be authentic now. I've got a cup of tea beside me. You know, as a professional speaker, you should never speak with a cup of tea, but it's a podcast and I'm sure it's appropriate. So my final celebration in my I Can Celebrate segment is I can do the Rubik's Cube. By the way, so can you, if you can be bothered. I used to think that people that could do the Rubik's Cube were absolute geniuses. Or is it genii? I don't know. but actually, they're not. They're not. It's not quite simple, but once you know the system, and there's many different systems, incidentally, but my daughter got a Rubik's Cube, and she could always do one side, and I could only do one side as well. She said, oh, Dad, I want you to do the Rubik's Cube, and I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this. And I thought, hang on a minute, there's a thing that we've got now, which we didn't have when I was a child, which is Google, and, well, YouTube in particular, and I looked at the videos, and I came across a video that said they can teach you how to do the Rubik's Cube in 10 minutes. I thought, right. So last week we were glamping, and I watched the video and made some notes. And basically, it's a sequence of events. You do one side, then you do the second layer, then you do the cross on the opposite side, and then you do the corners, and you flip the... I mean, this won't make much sense to you right now, but there is a system of how to do it, and all you have to do is learn they call them in the video that I watched algorithms, the sequence of twists and turns that will guarantee that the right place is going to the right slots. So I learned them, and there's about six different algorithms between four and eight moves. Once you know them and go over them repeatedly and you do them, and to begin with I would do it by reading my notes, but then I learned it, as your brain does, and I can now do it. I've actually got it down to, I think it was 3.5 minutes. We drove down south, and my wife drove for at the weekend, and my wife drove for a period of the journey, and it was on that drive when my wife was driving that I was able to get down to 3.5 minutes. 3.5 minutes. And I have heard that the world record is just something like 32 seconds. Amazing. Actually, I've just ordered myself a new Rubik's Cube, one that's meant to be slicker and faster. So maybe I can bring that time down. But my point here, so yes, I'm celebrating that. But what I want to say is there's an important message here. It's there's nothing... complicated. Well, it is a little bit complicated, but there's nothing genius about anybody that can do the Rubik's Cube. Actually, when I shared this on social media a few days ago, somebody sent me a link to a video of a man on something like Britain's Got Talent, but I think it was in Russia. He was juggling two Rubik's Cubes in his right hand, and he was solving the other Rubik's Cube in his left hand, so he was doing it one-handed. Amazing, amazing. I mean, that is amazing, but not genius. So I'd like to celebrate those things, and I would encourage you to send to me your celebrations. I can share some of them on the next podcast if I think that other people could benefit from hearing them. Don't forget the email address is icanacademy.co.uk. I can reflect. As I often do. I've got three children now, and my children, every time, not my eldest, but my two youngest, when I put them to bed, I mean, they used to want stories, but now they want me to share, not made up stories, but they want me to share stories of things that's happened in my life, particularly in my childhood. And I've run out of things, I've run out of memories to share with them. But something occurred today, coincidentally, this morning. I was contacted just before 9 o'clock by somebody. It was a member of the press, and the question was, had I read the papers that morning? And I thought, okay, we've heard in recent weeks and months that Peter Sutcliffe, Mum's Killer, he's got weeks to live, and I thought maybe he's passed away. Not that I would be celebrating that, I must say, and I might come back to that and explain that later, but it was John Humble, who was known as Wearside Jack. John Humble, if you don't know, or if you are a young person, or from outside the UK, was a man that, in the middle of this horrendous campaign at the hands of Peter Sutcliffe, John Humble, I think aged 23, 24, young man, decided to play a little game with the police, and he recorded a cassette recording, an audio recording, a little bit like this, I suppose, into a cassette, and he sent it to the police, pretending to be the killer. He was from the northeast. He had a Geordie accent. Although I have to say, and people that do have Geordie accents will beg to differ. But anyway, he was from the northeast, and the police thought it was him. They thought he was the killer. And what this meant was, when Peter Sutcliffe was arrested after that, and he'd already been arrested before the recording was received, he was let go, he was let free, because he didn't have the right accent. And I was asked if I wanted to comment, and I did give a comment. I thought about it, and I know, and I've seen it on social media today, that people have been saying, good riddance, no one's going to be crying over, his death, and all very negative. And I get that, I get that, people say he had blood on his hands, and, in the past, I would have agreed. But actually, there's only one person, really, that's responsible for the deaths of those women, and that is the last three women to die, Barbara Leach, Margarita Walls, and Jacqueline Hill. It's Peter Sutcliffe. He's the person responsible for that. And I have to say, and I'm not trying to make excuses for John Humble, aged 23 at the time, young man, but he did ring the police when he realised that they'd taken him seriously, his hoax. He called them to tell them it was a hoax, but they didn't believe him. Obviously, he was distressed at this, and I read a story about him wanting to kill himself. He went onto a bridge over a river, and he was, they had to talk him down. And he was arrested finally, I believe, 2005, or, 10, 12 years ago. Gosh, doesn't time fly? It might have been 2009. Anyway, he was arrested and eventually served time in prison. I actually went to court to see him on the day that he got sentenced. And I'll tell you why I went. I heard this recording when I was a child. I'll never forget it. I think it was Burley Liberal Club, like a social club in the late 70s. And I was there with my Uncle Isaac, Mum's brother, and Auntie Vicky. And for some reason, they thought it was appropriate to play this recording, this voice, which we thought at the time was Mum's killer. in the club over the tannoy, and I remember hearing it and sitting there rigid thinking, that's my mum's killer. And these words, the words, you're no nearer to catching me now than you were 4 years ago when I started, with this Geordie accent, it sent shivers down my spine. And for years, well, for the first few years after that, I was listening out for this voice wherever I went. But even when Sutcliffe was finally arrested and we realised that this was not the killer, this voice, I still always thought that Peter Sutcliffe sounded like the voice on the tape, the hoax. So when I went to court, whenever it was, 8 or 9 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I went to try and disassociate or disconnect the voice from Peter Sutcliffe. And even though I went, and I think initially that did happen, I still feel as though Peter Sutcliffe's voice is the voice, is the voice of John Humble the hoaxer. Anyway, he passed away today, and I did say, you know, what he did was wrong, it was appalling, but it's Peter Sutcliffe that was to blame. And I'm actually sorry to hear that he's apparently drank himself to death. Not a good way to go. And he has got family. So yeah, it's just a really sad case. And it's not something I'll be celebrating, but I do get how many people are angry. Just on that, not that I expected or intended to speak about anger, but one of the things that I've come to learn, and it's something I share with my children, is when you are angry, and you know there are times when it's appropriate to be angry, but when you're angry, the person that feels the anger is you. I try to share this with my children, and it seems to have been received by my daughter Isla, because I remember a few months ago, she was, my wife told me that she was in one of the neighbours' gardens, and younger than her, there was two children fighting with each other, and my daughter Isla did her best to explain, you know, when you're angry, and it's you that feels it, and but she's right, isn't she? She's right, and which is why I'm happy that I no longer will feel anger for Humble, although I don't think it's me who has a right to feel the anger, and Sutcliffe as well. I used to be consumed with anger for him, and I was able to let that go in 2010. And I will touch on that. Well, I'll come back to that in another section. I can speak. We can all speak. Well, actually, we can't all speak, can we? Because, of course, what was the name of that guy that won Britain's Got Talent? Was it last year or was it X Factor? He won it, a comedian, but he couldn't speak. He used a computer to tell his jokes. So I'll correct myself. It's not that we can all speak, but I Can Speak is the name of this segment, this section of the podcast. I Can Speak is the name that I give my presentation skills training. So what I thought I'd do, just to get, I know it's not going to be relevant to everybody, so if you want to fast forward a few, three or four minutes here, please feel free to do so. But if you are interested in improving as a speaker or benefiting from some of the stuff that I do when I do my training, this is what I'd like to share with you. And I learned this one, I'm going to share three, you know, because three always works well. But the first one is something I learned on the, well, Friday, the 3rd of November, 2006, I think, if I'm not mistaken, at 3 p.m. at the Belfry, it was my first Professional Speaking Association, or the PSA conference, in 2006, and I was encouraged to go along there to meet another inspirational speaker that might just be able to help me in some way. And he did, by the way, but more about that on another podcast. But I went along, and the president at the time, Molly Harvey, now a good friend of mine, walks on stage, and she did something, and it blew me away. That was it. She didn't do anything. She didn't start speaking. She just stood there and she looked at us. I think she smiled left, right. It was about 3 or 4 seconds. I thought, wow, to have the confidence to do that. Well, for me, it would have been courage, not confidence. I thought, that's brilliant. And I learned the power of the pause, that the way in which it creates anticipation and demonstrates that you are comfortable up there, you are in command of that space. It was just brilliant, and it's one of the things that I share, one of the first things that I share on my I Can Speak boot camps, is I get people up to the front, as I do throughout the day, but I get people up to the front and they introduce themselves, and typically they walk on and they start speaking really quickly about why they're there, and when we look back, or the feedback that I give them is that would have been, it was good, but it would have been even better had you just paused for a few seconds before you began. So that's my first presentation tip. When you're giving presentations, get to where you're going to speak from, pause, and then begin. So pause before you begin. By the way, I might come back to pausing throughout your presentations on another podcast. So, and I think the second one is, and was demonstrated and noticed by my son Ellis. Swigs his tea, shouldn't really do that. My son Ellis came to, and I will definitely be speaking about Ellis, and then I'll speak about all my children over the next few podcasts. But my son Ellis came to see me speak at the Royal Armouries in Leeds. It's about 4 years ago. So anyway, about 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago. Anyway, we were walking from the venue to the car. He's pulling my bag. He turns round to me and he asks me a question. He said, Dad, can I ask you a question? I said, yeah, go on, son. He said, do they pay you for that? I said, yeah, it's my job. He said, but you're just having a chat? I said, yeah, I know. He said, it's like you're in the playground with your friends. And he was right. It is just a chat. People, I know I did, beat themselves up about giving presentations. And yeah, of course, it's got to be professional, but it doesn't have to be, you know, politician-like. It's a chat. It's a conversational. So number two in my I Can Speak segment is make it conversational. Make your presentations conversational. So right now I'm doing exactly that. I'm just having a chat with you. I'm chatting to you. I'm imagining you listening to this in your AirPods or your earphones, in your car, running, whatever you're doing. I'm just talking to you. I'm having a chat. It's conversational. Rather than, so here is the same words, not conversational. What I am trying to do right now is I'm trying to speak in a conversational way so that you know what. In fact, I can't even do it. I can't even do it. So, I think I've made my point there. Pause before you begin. Make it conversational and chatty. And my third one has already been demonstrated, although I did it subtly, when I told you that I first came across Molly Harvey, who paused before she began, on the 3rd of November 2006 at the Belfry, I think, if I'm not mistaken, at 3 p.m. What I was doing there was being very specific. Specificity adds credibility to your presentations. My book, Just a Man, has sold 440,317 copies. That is specific. That is a number taken from the statement that I got a few months ago, and we'll have another one in a few weeks. Oh, there you go. By the way, did you notice the 44 there? Have I mentioned 44 to you? Have I mentioned 44? Well, 44, Mum died 44 years ago. She died on the 44th week of the year. Remember the tape from Humble? You're no nearer to catching me now than you were 4 years ago when I started. There was four children. Mum had four children. So four's always been prominent. And it's always meant something to me and my sister Sonia. I don't know, we've always thought it was a connection to Mum in some way. What blew me away was a few years ago, I decided to look. Have I just mentioned it just then? I can't remember. Yeah, I did. I didn't mention this. Mum died on the 44th week of the year, 30th of October. What was incredible, I got a bit tongue-tied there, was that her killer, Peter Sutcliffe, he lived, the night he killed my mum, at 44 Tanton Crescent. That is unbelievable. And I've not always known that. Even more unbelievable, and I do cover this in my latest book, Just a Man, is that where we live right now, where I am right now, I'm down in the basement, incidentally, trying to create some kind of soundproof room, is 444 miles away from the house my mum lived in as a young girl, up on the Isle of Skye, right to the doorstep, 444 miles, and that is where me and my wife got married, up on the Isle of Skye, and our first child is called Skye. We've also got Isla, and we've also got Ellis, my little boy. The place, which is 444 miles away, is a little croft called Ellishadder, a little township. I say township, there's four houses there called Ellishadder. Don't know about you, and I will revisit this from time to time. I think there's more to this world than we can fully explain. So that was I Can Speak. I can reply. Who can I reply to? I can reply to somebody who's I'm going to go onto my computer to see, because I put a post on LinkedIn earlier to tell people that I'm doing this podcast, this pilot podcast, and I asked for people to send me a question that might require a response from me. And I had a few. Thank you, Jennifer Barnfield, Debbie Brinnersley, Kerry McKevitt, Laurie Morgan, and the final one from Nikki Alderson. So I can reply to Nikki Alderson, and I might revisit the other ones on future podcasts. But I think, well, I'll read out what Nikki said. Having read your very powerful and moving article in the ICANN magazine, how could I forget the ICANN magazine? I'd suggest that forgiveness is an informative and captivating topic for any audience. The image of the Desmond Tutu moment is still firmly etched on my brain. So in response to that post from Nikki Alderson, specialist international corporate and executive coach supporting lawyers, or is it female lawyers, I believe? And anyway, well, the response is to share, going back to what I did at the beginning, that I can share, is I'm going to share what happened when I met Desmond Tutu back in 2010. I was invited to the Forgiveness Project conference. Archbishop Desmond Tutu was speaking, and three rows from the front, and he gave this incredible presentation. His pausing was unbelievable. Great humour as well, but a very poignant presentation about what took place in South Africa, the Truth and Reconciliation hearings, and I was on the edge of my seat. And he described this particular scene where these white military men were marched into this auditorium where there was a crowd of people that wanted answers, you know, wanted to understand why these men had done what they did. And this white officer turned to this crowd and said, "Yes, it was me. I gave the orders." And Desmond Tutu described the tension in the room. He says it was palpable. You could cut it with a knife. But then this white officer turned around to this black crowd and said, "Please forgive me." And slowly but surely, this crowd of people started off with one person, then somebody else. They started applauding, and the applauding started to spread around the auditorium until they were all applauding these men. I guess they were signifying that they wanted to, you know, find a way through the violence, through dialogue. They wanted to reconcile their differences and move forward in a more positive way. Unbelievable, unbelievable presentation, unbelievable scene, and I just loved it. And his final words, I'm not going to get them word perfect, but his final words were something like this. You can't force a person to forgive another. But he said, but when it occurs, it has the capacity to change a situation. Boom. Those words hit me like a tsunami of electricity, emotion. It was just wow. We were told by Marita, the organizer, to stay seated. He had a limousine outside. There would be gridlock. I'm sure that we'd all want to speak to him, she said. And I did. But we were told to stay seated. He left the stage and he started shaking the hands of those that were lucky enough to be at the edge of the rows. I'm at the opposite end. And he left the building. I got out of my chair. I pushed through the people that were sat down to the side, left-hand side, round the front, and I chased out of the door after him. And I shouted to Archbishop Desmond Tutu, "Excuse me, excuse me." And he turned round. He was about 5 steps down, 10 steps. He said, "Yes." I said, "You don't know what you've just done." I said, "You've just helped me forgive the man that murdered my mum when I was a child." I didn't have time to tell him the story. He just looked at me and threw his arms around me and held me like a father would a son. And he said, "Thank you." He turned round, continued the final steps to his limousine, and off he went. It's a day I'll never forget. So Nikki Alderson asked me to share that with you. That was my ICANN reply section. And if you've got any further questions for me, you can send them and I'll do my best to reply to them in this session going forward. And that email address, if I've not mentioned it already, is ICANN@theicannacademy.co.uk. I can recommend is one of my final, if not the final, no, it's not, it's the penultimate section. I can recommend is something that I'd like to do each, I want to say a week there, but I'm not sure if I'll be doing these every week. It might be every fortnight. But each time I do a podcast, I'd like to recommend something I've come across or somebody I'd heard or something I've read or listened to. And the first, I'm really pleased to share this with you. I've actually done this today, and I try and do it every day. And it's a mindfulness meditation audio recording. Have I got that? Have I described that correctly? Katie Garner, somebody I came across a few years ago. Beautiful woman, beautiful soul, beautiful message. And she does some fantastic work. She has a audio recorder. I'm probably going to get this wrong. Some kind of guided meditation. And what we do in our office, got Tracy, my PA, whenever we're in the office, blinds go closed, turn off the machine, no emails pinging in, turn off the phones, and sit back and we put on this recording, 50 minutes of pure joy. Her voice is beautiful and she takes us on a journey. We switch off for 15 minutes. We reset ourselves, and the thing that she has, and this is the thing that I'm recommended for you to treat yourself, indulge yourself with, you'll benefit from it, is her Reset Yourself in 15 Minutes. It's an audio download. It's £7.99 and it is absolutely worth every penny. You can get hold of that. Listen, I'm not getting a commission. She doesn't even know that I'm sharing this, but I'm sure she'll be grateful. Katie Garner, her website is www.stressless.life. I'm going to actually spell that. STRESSLESS, that's stressless.life. Not .co.uk, just stressless.life. Check out the Reset Yourself in 15 Minutes and get yourself that downloaded. You've probably got one already, but if you haven't, treat yourself. It's absolutely beautiful. And it's just great for stress. And we have a stress. I mean, there's more, you know, more benefits than just stress, but it's just great for you. And we've been doing it now for about a year in our office, and that's my recommendation. And I hope to hear that she's had loads of inquiries, because she'll wonder where they're coming from. So that's Katie Garner from stressless.life. I Can Be Seen, a final little bit of, well, it's not inspiration, it's just, if you want to see me live at an event, here's where you can do it. I have to say, when I do speak, and I do motivational speaking and presentation skills and such like, normally I'm speaking or working for an organisation, you know, Barclays Bank or, you know, NHS. So you cannot get to those events because they're closed for the organisation. But you can get to some of them that I do that are open, and I've got some coming up. Unfortunately, they're presentation skills mainly. The I Can Speak book, which I've touched on already. Next one in Leeds is on the 17th of September at Boatcliff Hall. Absolutely stunning venue. That's just near Leeds. 21st of October with I Can Speak in London at the Hilton. And 22nd of October, I Can Speak in Birmingham. Details on my website, icanspeak.co.uk. If you're really serious about speaking and you want to take it to the next level, we've got the Gravitas 3-Day Speaker Retreat. Alton Hall in Leeds, another fantastic venue, but this is for serious. I mean, this is storytelling, speaking to camera. We've got BBC, ex-BBC correspondent, and storytelling, and you've got to give a presentation. It's 3 days. It's fantastic. Check out gravitasretreat.com. 16th to 18th of November, final one this year. And I think I may as well mention whilst I'm here, but it's not until next year. But I'll mention it anyway. And it's on the 4th of the 4th. You know, 44 is my number. Well, on the 4th of the 4th next year at Ellen Road, that's the Leeds United football ground. In fact, it's at the Pavilion's Centenary, or the Centenary Pavilion, sorry, massive venue. We've got the I Can Live. That is a full day. Myself, a number of guest speakers, including a firewalk. I would love to see you at that. And the tickets can be obtained at icanlive.co.uk. We've made it, according to my Roland recorder. We've got 42 minutes. It's 43 minutes in a couple of seconds. So actually, it's going to be 44 minutes. Can you believe that? And it wasn't even scripted either. So I think that's it from me. Really looking forward to your feedback. Subscribe, whatever you need to do with podcasts. I'm not quite sure how they all work yet. It's just my pilot. So I've really enjoyed it. And I'm really looking forward to sharing some more words of wisdom with you, with the intention of helping you, inspiring you, you know, equipping you with tools and techniques to help you make your way through this turbulent thing called life, but we have got a life and we should celebrate that. Thanks for being here, and I look forward to seeing you here very, very soon. Goodbye for now.
I can make you feel good. I can make you feel great. I can make you feel nice. I can make you feel spice. I can make you feel right. I can make you feel loud. I can make you feel glow. I can make you feel